This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
No, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio with Charlie Dobbin. Yes, indeed, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie Dobbin?
I am very well, Dean Holland. It's a beautiful sunny day at my house. We had a tiny bit of rain last night, which is always a blessing, but it's looking pretty hot, pretty clear, pretty sunny at my end.
Yeah, we're at about 20 degrees here in the Collingwood area, and I think Ashy said they're about 22 in Toronto, and we're expecting that we got about a 40% chance of some serious rain. I'll call it, like, you know, rain with intention, you know, possibly around 11 that would continue into the afternoon. So we'll see. Time will tell.
Right. So no going out and playing today, it sounds like. It's an indoor afternoon, if that really happens.
Yeah, Gail's out doing a bit of weeding right now. But, and I think she's doing it because it may be an indoor afternoon, as you say. Yeah.
Monopoly, so. Here we go.
Yeah. Have you got any announcements or what's going on in your square footage? What's going on?
Ooh, well, you know, it's a big announcement. You know, just listening to the sponsor advertising as the show opened up, Urban Nature Store. Paul Oliver sent me an email, and of course he's been a guest on the show many times.
Yeah.
He's the gentleman who started the Urban Nature Store, created the whole idea of an environmentally sustainably friendly, happy store to support wildlife. And the ninth store is now open in sort of Hamilton, Ancaster. We're not, its mailing address is Hamilton, but it's right, I guess, on the cusp of Ancaster. So 1100 Golf Links Road store, Urban Nature Store, is now open, but the big excitement is the grand opening, and that's next Saturday. So
Fabulous. Put
that on your calendar if you're in the neighborhood. All kinds of cool stuff, obviously ribbon cuttings and discounts and promotions and live demonstrations, giveaways, raffles, all kinds of cool stuff. So, yeah, next Saturday, if you can get to 1100 Golf Links Road in Hamilton, enjoy, the Urban Nature Store. It's a completely, you know, Canadian-owned operation and a very nice guy who runs it.
Indeed. Yes, indeed. And both of us have been in his shops, in his stores, and they're great. I grew up about 5 minutes from that location. I know exactly where it is. I grew up just off of Golf Links for part of my existence. And it's called Golf Links because it runs off the Hamilton Golf and Country Club. That's why it's called Golf Links Road. So
nice location. And of course, lots of urban nature around there.
And lots of birds. You got it. Lots of birds. Okay. I'm going to give out the phone number because we'd love for you to give us a call if you have an indoor gardening question or an outdoor gardening question. If you live in Toronto, the number to call is 416-360-0740. And if you live outside Toronto, anywhere in the province of Ontario, including Hamilton, Ancaster, right on Golf Links, you use this number, 1-866-740-4740. And do let Ashy know if you're a first-time caller, because I will give you your garden wings. Call often, call early, and please, one question per call, because you know I've done it, Charlie. I will stop you dead in your tracks if you try and squeeze in that second question.
Yep, you got to be tough.
You got to be tough. Now, we're going to go to a quick break. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show and ready to get underway. And Charlie, why don't we go to our first caller? Okay,
sure.
Sounds good. We've got Teresa in Mississauga. Welcome to The Garden Show, Teresa.
Charlie, good morning, Dean. I'm calling about my garlic. My garlic is totally disappeared. In the fall, I planted about 60 cloves of garlic, and around February, March, they grew a good 3-4 inches. They were looking really good. And then around the beginning of June, they started to wilt. and we noticed last couple of weeks they're completely disappeared.
Huh.
Help.
So they disappeared above ground. So what happens when you dig down? What's down there?
I'm sorry?
When you dig down where the garlic was, what is still below ground? Anything?
Absolutely nothing. I dug right down, not even a sign of any cloves. Absolutely nothing. Have you heard anyone else about that? I listen to your show every week, but hardly anybody calls about garlic problems.
Well, it's interesting that you're asking this question because you're absolutely correct. I have had a couple of emails this week from people with issues with their garlic. Now, it was more to do with the fact that when they dig down, well, they're seeing that the top growth is looking quite yellow and wizened earlier than they expected. And when they dig, they have like a mushy bulb down there. They do have a bulb, but it's quite mushy. So this is an issue. So there's obviously environmental issues. We had a funny winter with all that mildness. So the garlic started to grow earlier than it should have. Yes. Then the question is, what happened after, you know, the mildness went by, we had a little bit of cold, we had an early spring, we've had lots of rain.
Right.
And the thing about garlic and onions is there are insects that do love to get into the bulb. There are onion maggots, there are thrips. There are, thrips will do a, you know, damage above ground. And there's just sort of all kinds of things. When you say your garlic disappeared, so it never flowered, obviously. The green leaves just shriveled up and disappeared a while ago.
Now, my question is, when I plant them in the fall again, should I plant them in the same place? Will it happen again?
The short answer is no. No, if you've had issues with a crop like garlic, keep in mind, whatever's going on is below ground. So insects in the soil, bacteria, infestations of one kind or another, do not plant garlic or onions in that area again. You may never plant it there again, but at least wait 3, 4, 5 years so that you are definitely rotating that crop right to a different spot. And make sure you're rotating to a spot with good full sun and well-drained soil.
Yeah, I've been planting them for quite a few years, and this is the first time I had a problem with them.
Yeah. Like they always say,
When we planted those flowers that they totally disappeared, the impatiens, remember way back?
Yes.
Remember years ago, everybody lost their impatiens. It reminded me.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, this is exactly what happened. I wonder if they're ever going to come up again.
Okay, so thinking back to when the impatiens disappeared, you're right. It was downy mildew that caused that. That was, again, it was a fungal disease that nobody saw coming. You know, it was a silent infestation. Everybody bought their impatiens like normal, planted them, they looked beautiful, and 2 weeks later, they disappeared. Like, they were just gone overnight. So, yeah, again, that's a rotate your crops. And the trick with the allium crops, so onions, garlic, leeks, never put them in the same location for more than 3 years at any time. Always, always rotate them around just because it's so easy for different kinds of, infestations in the soil. So even if your garlic is happy and healthy, rotate it, at least every 3 years.
Okay.
Thanks, Teresa.
Okay, yeah, thanks for the call, Teresa. Charlie, I have a question then to that end, because as you know, a couple of years ago, I put in a bunch of allium. Now, I didn't dig them up. I just left them where they are, and they've come up again. So, like, should maybe I leave them there and theoretically dig them up then and then put them in another spot? Or what should I do?
No. With the allium you planted are what we call ornamental onions.
Yeah.
So you're not planting them for harvesting purposes.
No.
You know what? If they're fine, what you'll find with so many bulbs is they're amazing the first year. They're very good the second year. And then by, 5, 6, 7 years, they probably will stop coming up.
Okay.
But should you move them? Most people wouldn't. It's just too much work.
Oh, good. I'm so glad you said that because I really don't want to.
No, exactly. And you know what? And you may just find that they're great, that they're so happy. They just keep on perking along. And obviously they are multiplying. Small little ones will come up along with the big ones that you planted. So it might turn out that, 20 years from now that they're all still fine. But if they do disappear, don't be shocked and surprised. But I wouldn't bother moving them.
Okay, great. Okay, going to give out the numbers again just before we go to break. 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We'll be back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yeah, we're back here on The Garden Show on this. This is the first weekend of July, of course. Yeah, you know, we're the first July started on a Monday. So here we are, the first Saturday of July. And we certainly have been having lots of summer weather. And I think you were even saying, Charlie, that the balance actually between rain and heat this year hasn't been too bad. Like in Prince Edward County, where you are, the farmers aren't complaining.
Not at all. And we do tend to be on the dry side here. This is a, we always say we have a dome over the county because, you know, there's rain all around us, rain out on the lake and rain above the 401. But here it tends to be hot and dry and sunny, which makes it lovely for visitors when they're coming for to hang at the beach. We so often have blue skies and dry days. But no, my lawn right now is green, and I don't think I've had a green lawn in July ever since I moved here, which of course isn't that long, but for 4 years, it's always been yellow and crispy by now.
Yeah, well, I'm happy that you have a green lawn. Green lawns are the best. Okay, this next caller, I'm pretty sure sent you an email already about a cherry tree, but I think she's looking for a bit more information. So let's go to Hazel now, who's calling from Mississauga. Welcome to The Garden Show, Hazel.
Thank you. Good morning.
Yes,
I did send it the email, and Charlie, you had asked for some more information. Just as a refresher, the cherry tree, we've had it a number of years. In fact, we've had it since 2015. I looked it up. You wanted to know what kind of cherries I had and what my husband had sprayed it with. Because we were having, we had a bumper crop, and then we started seeing worms in the cherries, and then we've got this fungus-looking thing. But anyway, in answer to your questions, we had a 4-in-1 cherry tree, and the varieties are Black Tartarian, Montmorency, Lapins, and Royal Anne, and my husband sprayed it with the dormant oil that you always recommend.
Wow. Okay. So that's good. So the reason you've got the 4-in-1 is because cherries, you'll always get a bigger crop with your fruit trees when you have proper pollination going on. And so they've got one tree, they've grafted four different stems onto it, or three different stems onto it likely. It's probably a Montmorency, and then they've added three other grafted branches to the tree. So you've got different flowering times, different hopefully tasting cherries. And you've had good crops. Well, what was the crop like last year?
Worms.
Oh.
Worms. Yeah, we always get a good crop, but hardly get the chance to eat them.
Right.
But this year is,
because those are pretty tough cherries to have so much going on. So worms and, yeah, so this goes back, and Dean and I were talking about this a few minutes ago, the challenge of growing great fruit trees year after year after year. Remember, all the sugar inside a fruit tree makes it a very edible plant to many, many insects, whether it's the leaves or the bark, you know, under the bark or into the fruit. We've got lots going on. Now, the dormant spray is important. I'm glad your husband sprayed it. And you mentioned in your email he sprayed it while the tree was dormant. So hopefully there was no rain within 24 hours, because the way dormant spray works, you've got a dormant tree, no leaves, just little buds that haven't opened yet. And it's an oil mixed with water, mixed with lime sulfur. So it's both a fungicide and an insecticide. And when sprayed properly, it prevents eggs from hatching that are on the tree that have been there over the winter, from little insects that might chew into the plant or chew into the fruit, and then fungal diseases as well. Then there's the environmental stuff. So we've got very humid last few weeks. So we're going to see lots and lots of fungal diseases on everything, whether it's fruit trees or, you know, service berries or lilacs. We're going to see lots of powdery mildew and different mildews, and that you clearly have something like that going on your tree right now. Well, the problem is, so in Ontario, for the homeowner, there are not the really, you know, effective but also very toxic sprays that we did used to use on our fruit trees are no longer available. And dormant spray is your best. And your husband's obviously done that in preparation for a better crop this year. You know, when I look at all the information, even the information coming out of Agriculture Canada, for cherry trees specifically and for different insects, they're recommending all kinds of chemicals that we no longer can use, like Captan and Furbam. And sulfur is always registered for homeowners, sulfur-based fungicides. So those can be used as per directions. But when you reuse the same fungicides, if you're getting the kind of weather where you need to use it, then we start breeding for the resistance of the fungus to the spray. And before you know it, it's no longer effective. So some cultural controls include good pruning. So making sure the tree is open, there's good air circulation through the tree, good sun penetration, because you want that rapid drying of the foliage. When we do get a rainstorm and we do have high humidity, you want to make sure that the tree is not wet as the sun goes down. The leaves need to be as dry as possible. So, and also that helps when you're spraying, when you've got an open tree where if you are spraying a soap solution because you see insects, or you're spraying sulfur because you've got fungal issues. Fungal diseases we don't ever eradicate. All we ever do is prevent. And that was what the dormant spray was all about. It was to help prevent fungal infections. That's the lime sulfur part. So I know there's no easy answer, I'm afraid to say, Hazel. And like I say, it sounds to me like your husband did the right thing with the dormant spray. The best suggestion now is pruning, you know, opening the plant. Though, don't prune now. Best time to prune is very early in the spring. Late winter is when we prune our fruit trees. And you can be pretty radical when you're pruning when they're dormant at that time of year. Any pruning done now in July will be very hard on any plant. So avoid any pruning now other than deadwood. You can always, always remove deadwood. And your crop looks pretty horrible in the pictures, I'm afraid to say. So you might have to go to the farmer's market to get your cherries. I'm sorry.
The thing, my question is, now that we've started chopping all these branches off that had all the, you know, gungy looking cherries, have we cut off all the varieties now?
Oh, I have no idea. Good question. Depends what you cut, where you cut it. Originally, back when you 9 years ago, when the tree came to your home, that would have been very distinctive where the different grafts had taken place. You can look. I mean, it's always a bit of a swollen connection where the graft was made. So just look closely. And you'll know, you'll see it as well next spring as the plant heads into flowering. But for now, work with what you've got. I wouldn't do a lot of chopping of branches right now if you can avoid it.
We have
okay, thanks very much for the call there, Hazel. We have to run to our next caller. We have Georgie on the line, who is calling from Toronto. And Georgie is a first-time caller. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, it's correct.
Okay, well, I would love to give you your garden wings. Here we are. There we go.
Welcome to the show.
What do you got for Charlie?
I have a question about my petunias. They are in full bloom, they look good and everything, but they start getting some tiny little bugs, and that happens every year. They are around the flower, at the stem of the flower, and eventually they kill the plant.
Yeah. So petunias, excuse me, particularly if you've got the double flowering petunias, they are very susceptible to aphids. So you probably, if you look at the little bugs, they're very small. But if you squish them, they're full of liquid. They suck the juice from the petunias. So what you need to do is go to your local garden center and buy something called Safer's Soap. So it's just a soap solution. It's not detergent. And do not spray the soap when the sun is out on the petunias. You'll have to get a hold of an insecticidal soap, and then you will spray very early in the day or very late in the day when the sun is not on the plants, and you will make sure that your spray contacts the insects. You're going to have to get right down on your hands and knees and get in under those flowers and spray the spray onto the insects, and it's quite effective. It will work very quickly. It will kill all kinds of insects, and they'll be fine. I find that petunias, if they're a little bit stressed, they do get aphids. So make sure that your petunias are happy. They're not too much water, but they're being kept well watered. Consider some fertilizer, depending on the quality of your soil. Next spring before you plant, consider compost, just to make sure you've got lots of good organic material. Petunias will indicate their stress by getting things like aphids.
I didn't get the name of the spray I'm supposed to use.
Yeah, it's just an insecticidal soap. So okay. Insect soap. The company that made it originally is a company called Safer's. So S as in Sam, A, F as in Frank, E-R-S, Safer's Soap. There's other people out there making soap as well. So when you go to the garden center, you're just going to look for it comes in two ways. One is a ready-to-use bottle, so a spray bottle ready to go. You take it home and spray immediately. Or you can buy it in a concentrated bottle, and you take it home and you mix it with water at home in a spray bottle and spray from there, or whatever way you want to spray it. So, but it works very well, but it must contact the insect.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay. Good
luck. Thanks for the call. And don't be a stranger, Georgie. You make sure you call back again. Yeah. We love those first time callers. What happens? You say that a stressed petunia or any flower will invite aphids. So what's happening to the flower that the aphid accepts the invitation?
Well put. So we human beings think that we are like the top of the totem pole, and we like control everything, and we know everything, right? But more and more we're learning that there's an awful lot of communication going on in the rest of the world between in nature. And it's like watching seagulls talk to each other. I mean, there are animals communicate to each other, and we also know that plants communicate quite effectively. A lot of it takes place underground in the roots, where they talk to each other. And it's been shown over and over and over that if one plant, a young tree as an example, is infested with an insect, and near it are other trees, that tree is able to tell all the trees around it, I have such and such infesting me, and the other trees will immediately start to produce chemicals to reject that insect infestation. So there's lots going on there where trees and plants are talking to each other. So we also know that when a plant is stressed for one reason or another, so it's unhappy, it's struggling to do well and achieve its genetic potential, we don't know how, but we know that a signal is sent, and aphids will grow wings as required. So aphids are pretty lazy. They just hang out and suck the juice out of plants. Mm-hmm. But if they want to move and want to move quickly, they can grow wings very quickly, and they can zero in on a plant that is begging to be attacked. And it's not really begging to be attacked, but it's indicating that it's unhappy and it's available to be attacked. And that's what happens. And so, like I said, it's all biochemistry. It's invisible information being sent. We don't see it, and we didn't really think it was possible, but we know that it's true.
Wow. Very, very interesting. Wow. Yeah. Like, it's a big wow. Okay. I'm going to, before we go to our next caller, I'm going to give out the numbers one more time. We do have lots of open lines, so give us a call, 416-360-0740. That's the Toronto number, or toll-free anywhere in the province of Ontario outside Toronto, 1-866-740-4740. We have another first-time caller on the line, Stan, calling from St. Catharines. Welcome to the Garden Show, Stan.
Well, thank you very much. I hope this isn't the last time.
I'm going to give you your garden wings. There you go.
Yeah, you have wings. Woo-hoo. You can call again anytime. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I have a problem with my magnolia tree. I have the scale. Now, yep. I couldn't spray it in the springtime. I know that's the most appropriate time to do it because the weather was so bad, and I'm stuck with a lot of scale right now. Is there anything I can do for that right now?
No, I'm just double-checking. I always forget. So scale is an insect, for people that might not know what scale is. It's kind of an amazing insect. It's very small, and when the babies are born, they are tiny, tiny, tiny little exposed insects with six little legs crawling around on your plants. As they get a little bit older, they grow a shell over top of their bodies, a hard shell. So it's called an oyster shell scale when it grows that hard shell. So it's living underneath that shell. So that's why your point is a good one, that you don't just spray for magnolia scale anytime, because you're wasting your time if they're all adult scale and they've got that hard shell in place. You only spray when the nymphs are crawling. They also call them crawlers. And that's when we actually do our spraying, because that's when we can actually be effective. And I'm pretty sure.
When's the next appropriate time I can spray it?
Yeah. Okay, so two times. So it is interesting, too, when scale is on your tree, quite often people don't see the scale, but they see the evidence of the scale, and that's the black mildew that grows. It's called sooty mold that grows on the plant from the sap that drips because of the scale, leaving little holes behind. So early in the spring, when the plant is dormant, we were just talking about dormant spray for fruit trees. Dormant spray can go, horticultural oil can be used on magnolias in the spring when the plants are dormant. In the meantime, soap can be used. Hold on, I'm just trying to double check what. I might have to come back, because it's specific to Ontario. It's different all over the world, right? When to spray. I might have to come back just after the break and give you specifics. But once the nymphs are out there, horticultural oil will work, soap will work. And we'll come right back after this break, and keep listening, get your pen and pencil ready, and I'll give you more information on this.
Okay. Yeah, thanks very much for the call, Stan. As Charlie says, we'll get back to that. But I do have to take a quick break. We'll be back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, this is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, and we are back, and we have some callers on the line. We're going to go right now to Christine.
Wait.
Oh, you had an update. Sorry.
Go back
sorry.
To Stan.
Yeah, you had an update for Stan's call. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem. So Stan, two great websites, well, lots of great websites on this subject of magnolia scale, and you are not the only person with this problem. It happens every single year in two different trees. So going back to what Dean and I were talking about earlier, the Morton Arboretum, cultural management of magnolia trees to avoid scale. Number one, trees that are stressed are more prone to attack by scale. So to avoid stress in your trees, keep your trees in good health through proper watering, mulching, and pruning of dead and infested branches. Avoid excessive fertilization, as this may lead to a buildup of scale populations, et cetera, et cetera. Early in the spring, you can use the horticultural oil, as we discussed, when the plants are actually dormant. But very, very important, you must make contact. You know, the spray has to be very, very thorough. When it comes to the soaps and oils, which again are effective on the crawler stage of scale. That there's that thorough coverage. There must be contact between the spray and the crawlers in order to kill them. There might you're likely to need multiple applications since there's no residual activity. It's a contact only. They die. So check the label for timing. But when I check in Ontario, of course, the whole trick is that adult scales we can't kill, only the crawlers. And that does tend to be late August or end of summer in Ontario. Most of the females will have produced nymphs. So you can keep an eye, watch. You can also scrape off the adults with your fingernails and dispose of them. And all that important cultural control as well. So good luck with that. And it is solvable, and magnolia trees are worth saving. So do what it is you need to do to care for that tree and get it happy.
Love our magnolia trees. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Well, this seems to be a day talking about pests and fruit trees and things like that. And I think our next caller is in line with that. We have Christine calling from our neighbors to the south, calling from Buffalo. Welcome to the Garden Show, Christine.
Oh, thank you. Welcome. Have a nice day.
Thank you. Welcome
Charlie,
to the show.
This is a silly call, really, but I thought maybe you have a better answer than what I've come up with. I have a beautiful peach tree, and the squirrels will not leave it alone. I get up in the morning, and there's at least 10 peaches on the ground every morning and every day, supper time. Is there
I've been recommending the Charlie Dobbin Garden Show slingshot for a number of years now. I mean, we haven't done it, but,
I can send them to
you.
The dog. You know what? What have you been doing? Have you been trying? Like, how big is the tree? Can you net it by any chance?
No.
It's too big?
Too big.
Yeah, you're in a good situation to grow peaches too. It's warmer where you are than we are, and squirrels are just pests. Well, in my house, chipmunks are my pests. You should see how many bulbs are being rearranged by the chipmunks this year. Unbelievable.
Well, at least I still have them. A mess in spring. Like, you know,
Charlie, is there any kind of a baffler that you could put on the tree to stop the squirrels from getting up there? Or,
no,
I mean, it would have to be a pretty big one. I think.
Squirrels can jump. They're great jumpers. So, there's some sort of things that, like, there's the scarecrow is a sprinkler, like a motion detector sprinkler that's quite good at sort of coming on when there's things like squirrels in your tree and knocks them out of the tree because it's a big blast of water. So people will use things like that. The aluminum foil plates, the pie plates, hung in the tree to swing around and make noise and glitter and all that sort of thing can help. The product called Plant Skid, which I've recommended in the past, is a good repellent for any mammal. So it's certainly worth trying. You spray the tree and it's good for 6 months. So it might be worth trying to try that product because the animals do not like the smell of it at all.
Those are some
of my suggestions. What have you been trying? What have you been doing? Anything?
Opening the door and chewing them out. Telling them to get out. I don't mind caring, but they're getting a little... You know, it's a little too much when I'm picking up 20 off the tree every day.
I know. It's so nice. Well, and, you know, remember that really smelly soap, Irish Spring soap?
Yeah.
That was often recommended to be hung in crops because of deer, because it's such a strong smell.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering something like that could work with the squirrels, just because they won't like the smell of Irish Spring. Now, it might get a bit foamy in your backyard if there's a rainstorm, but certainly will keep things clean.
Anything's worth a try. I'll try the aluminum plates. I didn't think to put them in the tree.
Yeah, something just to make life uncomfortable for them. You just want to make them, other than just yelling at them. The slingshot idea is not a bad one either.
Well, I don't want to kill them. You know, I don't mind that they're here because I enjoy them. But, you know, I don't mind sharing either, but not the whole tree.
Yeah, I agree. And they just take one bite and toss them, too. I mean, if they'd eat the whole thing, it would be different.
Exactly what they do. If they ate the whole thing, I wouldn't care.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I hear you.
Okay. All right.
Well good luck, Christine. Okay. And just in case anybody's listening who has any other good suggestions, please feel free to call in and share your tips on keeping squirrels out of the fruit trees.
Great. Thanks for the call, Christine. Good luck with that.
Thanks a lot, Charlie.
Thanks for calling.
Now, I got to tell you, for what it's worth, I was tempted to ask Christine how what the circumference of her trunk of the tree was. But, I mean, I don't think it's a very practical idea. But as we've talked about with my bird feeders, I don't mind the squirrels at all. They pick up, you know, they live a life. They pick up the stuff off the bottom. And I have had great success because of the proximity of the feeders being over 10 feet away from the nearest trees and 10 feet away from the house. They're sort of in between. And I just go out there periodically and I put like an edible oil on the poles. We've talked about that. We've talked about Vaseline. And it's actually quite funny because occasionally they will try and – we've seen them. They try and climb up, and then they start to slide back down. And it's quite funny because it doesn't hurt them. No. And they just go on – they just give up, and they just keep eating the stuff off the bottom. So I don't know if there's any way that Christine or somebody like that could collar a tree, but it's probably not in the best interest of the tree either.
No, exactly. I wouldn't do that. Well, that's the thing. Yeah. And peach trees do tend to be low branches, low to the ground. So you're not going to have that 10-foot clearance. And there is a product that we use when we have insects like gypsy moths, what used to be called gypsy moths are now called spongy moths. It's called Tanglefoot. And it's a strip that's almost like a strip of cardboard that you wrap around the trunk of the tree, but it's really sticky on the outside. So insects that are crawling up the trunk to eat your leaves get stuck in the stickiness and die. Tanglefoot.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You wouldn't want to do that to squirrels. That would be really freaky if you had like squirrels hanging from off the trunk of the tree, stuck. Screaming. That wouldn't be nice. So I wouldn't use Tanglefoot for squirrels, but it does work very well for insects.
Gotcha. Yeah, as I say, I don't mind the squirrels on the property. We have squirrels, we have rabbits, we have chipmunks, we have red squirrels, and they all have these parties. It looks like Snow White's garden, you know. They all hang around the bottom of the bird feeder because they get all the stuff that drops, and I have absolutely no issue with that. And like I said, it's quite funny to see them occasionally slide. They look like fireman squirrels trying to...
It's really cute when they do that because they're so intent. They're sure they're going to make it this time. They'll try, get a little bit further, and then the slide starts.
Yeah, and then they slide down. Okay. Well, we have to slide into our next commercial break, but we will be back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yep, we're back in our last little segment here, going right till 10 o'clock. And we've got another caller on the line, another couple. Here's Cheryl from Thornhill. Welcome to The Garden Show, Cheryl.
Good morning, and it's a beautiful morning. I love mornings like this.
Yes.
Charlie, I just want to thank you for some advice you gave me. I phoned, I think it was early April, and they started all this optic thing with all the providers, and they were digging up the front of all our property and putting in this stupid stuff, and they took two big plants out that I had there. And they filled it up with gravel. They finally, and you advised me, this one plant, and I looked up what it is. It's an Emerald Gaiety Euonymus.
Oh, yeah.
And it has a huge root ball. I managed to get it onto a dolly and put it in the shade and wrapped it in some garden fabric, which you told me to. And that was the beginning of April. They just finished last week. I finally had a neighbor help me get the plant back on the dolly. It was actually growing. And I just got it into the backyard yesterday, and it's doing great. It survived wonderfully.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, well, that's good. You did the right thing. And remember, you may want to cut, maybe not right now, but before winter, tidy up that euonymus a bit. If it's a little scraggly, don't hesitate to do some tip removal to just, you know, make it look nicer, keeping in mind that it lost some roots along the way. So to lose some of its above ground growth is a good balance.
Okay. Yeah, it does look in certain spots or a few things, little... that were dead, and I just cut them off. But
good. Yeah, and exactly.
The root ball on it is something like 18 inches wide or 2 feet. Mm. And I couldn't pick it up myself. I had to have a neighbor help me get it on there, and then I kind of rolled it into the hole I dug in the ground. But it was amazing. So
thank
you very much.
Good story. Thanks for calling, and thanks for the update.
Thanks very much for that call there, Cheryl. Charlie, quick question about that. How long with a transplant like that should you sort of expect or allow for the roots to reestablish? Is it like a couple of years or?
It depends how vigorous the plant is. Depends how old the plant is. It sounds like a pretty good sized one, but they are, you know, as long as the proper, you know, the TLC, right? The good quality soil, well-drained soil, you know, effective of sunlight. Euonymus is great because it'll go sun or shade and all that. Well, it'll settle in fairly quickly, just sort of, again, depending on the vigor. One way to speed it up, establishing the plant back into its new home, is using like a plant start, which is like a root stimulating fertilizer, which will be a high middle number. So 5-15-5 is, I think, is plant start. 10-52-10 is another one. It's all about transplanting and stimulating root growth. So that's not a bad idea for Cheryl to consider as well, if she's at all concerned.
Excellent. Okay, let's go to our, we have one more caller on the line. Let's go to Maureen from North York. Welcome to the Garden Show, Maureen.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Dean. I'm calling about a healthy plant. I just purchased, and I've always wanted one, a black-eyed Susan. It's in a pot that's about 10 inches wide and about 18 inches high. Is that too small to keep it on the patio for the summer? Should I put it in something bigger? And the other thing is, what do I do when it starts to get cold? Can I keep it in the pot, or do I need to then put it in the ground?
Okay, good questions. So is your patio, how many hours of sun would it be receiving on your patio?
6 to 8. I put it in the front first, Charlie, and it started to droop. It was hot, but much more there. I get about 11 hours of sun in the front. So it seems to be happy.
Yes, a little less sun in the back. You know what? Bigger pots are always easier because we don't have to water as often. So if you can, you know what I would do? And particularly, it will not survive. I don't think it'll survive the winter in that small pot. It'll need a bigger pot. So maybe what you should do is go shopping for a beautiful big pot that you love that will be a permanent fixture on that back patio. Plant the black-eyed Susan into it now with the intention of leaving it in that pot for the winter, and it'll likely survive, but 20 inches around.
Okay. Thank you, Charlie. I love it. It's got 12 flowers blooming. And I want to give a word of praise to Ashley. She is so delightful to talk to.
Ashley, thank you.
Ashley is great.
And Ashley thanks you. She's smiling probably from ear to ear right now.
And thank you, as always, Charlie and Dean.
Thanks, Maureen.
I enjoy your music, and I'm looking forward to see you in Tom Thompson's wake.
Thank you. Yeah, me too. Thank you so much.
Are you doing a North York show, Dean, or a Toronto show?
We have some shows coming up in the fall in that area. Yeah, I'd have to look at the calendar, but yeah, we have a spattering of shows in the fall again for that show that continues to play throughout the province. Yeah.
Great. It's a great show, Maureen. Totally worth seeing. And Dean is splendid in it.
Okay, a little bit crotchety, but you know.
One in Markham. It's in Markham. Right. That's where I'm going. Yeah, I know, Charlie, you praise it. So I just want to give a little shout out to Dean, too. And then, Charlie, you're always wonderful.
Thanks, Maureen.
Thanks, Maureen.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Wow. Thank you.
We got to go. Then there's another show coming up, not to mention the news. So I guess we got to get into our own gardens.
Me too. Yeah, I'm going to slip out before the rain comes.
Yeah, good idea. Thanks, Dean. Thanks, Ashley. I hope you're just glowing right now. And we'll see you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.